listening to The Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. It's The Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Good afternoon, Sue. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine, actually. Thank you. I've had a really good weekend last weekend when I was at Bread and Butter.
Were you? At Bread and Butter.
Yeah, so Bread and Butter, it was a really good idea. We had Tara May, who's organised it, in the studio, didn't we?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, really interesting lady. It's a very clever idea, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really, really good idea. Yeah. And it was a great, great, sort of, whole event, really. It was 2 days. It was at the Institute of Directors, so it was all posh, you know, and all those like big gold paintings, you know, all those gilded
candelabra and all
that. And all those sweeping staircases. So it was really, really interesting. And Tara managed to get together a really great lineup. So there was the guy who founded Grays, you know, those that box of stuff that you get delivered. You don't go to London, do you?
No, not very often.
So, he was there explaining how he got started and, you know, how he's now turned it into a multi-£1 million business. And there was the co-founder of Green and Blacks, you know, the chocolate people.
Oh, the chocolate people.
Yeah, explaining, you know, how he's a real believer in sustainability and free markets and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. He was really interesting. And then the other good thing is they had buyers from, food buyers from, places like Selfridges and Fortnum and Mason's. They were doing taste panel sessions, which was great because what it meant was that if you had a new product and you wanted to see what these guys thought, you could take it along. Mm. They would taste it and give you loads and loads of advice, not just on, the taste of what you had, likelihood of you getting it into somewhere like Selfridges. But also they'd give you really good advice on the packaging and things like that, because obviously that's really important as well, isn't it, if you've got a product.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
So it was really well organised, and a lot of debate and discussion and people trying to understand how they could, how they could make the products better and how they could, sell them nationally. So it was really good, really, and really nice people all trying to help each other.
Fantastic. I think it's a brilliant idea. I love it.
Yeah. It's only the food sector, to me, where people are just so willing to give up their time to talk to you. Whereas some of the other sectors are a bit competitive for me.
Yeah. People are very passionate and very sharing and collaborative, I think is the thing. Yeah.
So what I've got for you, Paul, is because you weren't there, I've got some pre-records that we did. So we recorded some sort of sound bites with people that were there. So I've got Steph Croft-Simon from Nom Foods, and she was explaining her stuff. And then Ben Whitehead from Spare Fruit. I don't think I've got the right teeth in today. and then Konomi Nuts.
Is it because it's National Baklava Day and you've been tucking into some baklava?
I have actually stolen some, yes. and then Stephanie Peritori, who is lovely. And Stephanie helped us in our big unboxing event at London Food Tech Week a few weeks ago. And Stephanie's great fun. And then Ross of Borough Broth. So we've got some lovely pre-recorded sessions with them, if you wanted to have a listen to them. And then we can have a little chat. And I have bought you some baklava today.
Oh, fantastic. I haven't had lunch.
Because it is, I know you haven't, and because it is National Baklava Day. So I thought the only thing you can do on National Baklava Day is to eat baklava.
What a good idea.
I've got some for you.
Fantastic.
Shall we listen to our lovely people from Bread and Butter?
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm at the Bread and Butter Fest on Saturday the 12th of November, so it's actually a pretty horrible rainy day out there, so I'm very pleased to be inside. We're in the Institute of Directors, which is a very grand building, and I'm sitting opposite Stephanie Croft-Simon, who's from Nom Foods, and this event's really interesting. There's loads and loads of sort of talks by people like Green and Blacks and Selfridges, really trying to help people who are starting out, what they should be doing, how they should be selling their stuff, how they should be packaging it, what they are looking for as buyers and all that sort of stuff. So very, very good. Stephanie, why are you here today?
Here really just to hear some talks by some of the brilliant brands that we watch and admire, and hearing more about their businesses and how they got to being where they are, and what challenges they've faced, and generally kind of what their mission is, and so meeting other people as well, networking.
It's a good idea, isn't it, to learn from other people's mistakes, isn't it? Rather than try and avoid making them yourself. But I mean, we all make mistakes as we refine our product. What's the most interesting speaker you heard so far today?
Hugh Thomas from Ugly Drinks was absolutely brilliant, and sort of told a warts and all story about his business and how it came to be, and lots of things that we could identify with, lots of kind of the manufacturing issues and technical difficulties that any food startup faces. So I absolutely loved hearing about that and his sort of path to success.
And let's talk about non-food. So why have you set this up? What is your passion?
So the mission with non-foods is to make healthy, convenient snacks. I started the business nearly 4 years ago because of my own food allergies. So was diagnosed with really severe allergies basically overnight, and realised that there was a huge gap in the market for free from stuff which tasted good and you could have on the go. So I started making oat bars in my kitchen, and the kind of snack range developed from there. And so really we want to make free from foods available to everyone that are kind of in the mainstream categories. So food to go, where you might buy your chocolate bar or your crisps, but offering something refined sugar-free that's healthy, that everyone's got access to, that doesn't exclude anyone.
So what I'm finding when I'm talking to people that are in the free from area is that what's happening now is that people are just making stuff and trying to get that point where somebody's buying it because it's just amazing, as opposed to it hasn't got this, hasn't got that, hasn't got the other. That's like a second benefit. The fact is, it's now, it didn't used to be like this a few years ago, now it has to taste just as good as the fat or whatever it is alternative, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And why shouldn't free from products taste great if there's 30 to 35% of people with an intolerance or an allergy? We should be able to grab stuff just like everyone else can, and it should taste good. It shouldn't be free from taste as well. So that's something we're very much seeing and have seen over the last few years, is that the free from market is becoming really quite mainstream. And there's some really great, delicious stuff there. I think it used to be the case that gluten-free meant maybe that the taste was compromised, so they compensated for that by adding a ton of sugar or some additives and flavourings, but I really don't think it's like that anymore, and I think the market is a really exciting place to be at the moment.
And where have you managed to get your stuff in, in any sort of mainstream shops? I mean, 4 years on now, it's not a kitchen table effort anymore, is it?
Yeah, so we have a range of oat bars and a range of popcorn, and it's all organic. So the main retailers we're with are Whole Foods, Abel and Cole, Ocado, Holland and Barrett, and lots of great independent health food stores, cafes, gyms, delis, places like that.
And advice to anybody who's still at the kitchen table stage, what is the thing, the one thing for you where you suddenly went that step up? You know, in your head you're thinking, right, I'm really going to go for this. What made that difference for you?
I think once you know that your product has legs and people like it, i.e. do loads and loads of market research and lots of focus groups and take on board all feedback, whether it's positive or negative, and then just start meeting buyers. And at the end of the day, that's their job, is to look at products and tell you their feedback. So go with an open mind and approach people and chat to people about your product. And I think if you do that, then you're starting off well, and that way you know what the response to your product's going to be. And then I suppose from there, it's really a decision about whether you're going to make the stuff yourself by hand or whether you're going to outsource it. There are all sorts of hurdles to jump, but
And if you're doing that research, don't just ask your mum. I think that's the thing, isn't it? You want a range of people.
Yeah, I guess you want to get a kind of bias-free opinion on all this stuff. So, yeah, going and meeting buyers, meeting other people who have done it, other people in the industry. Events like this are really useful, and trade shows, just network and go and chat to people. And I actually find that particularly the health food market is a really open and friendly place to be. So generally people are on a mission to do good and to help people. So they're usually quite up for chatting.
But you need to take that advice and actually, you know, don't just sit at home at your kitchen table. If you want to succeed, you've got to go out and meet people. You've got to go and meet these buyers. You've got to go and get some feedback. And you can't just sit there. You're going to have to start networking and start really understanding how you get sales, aren't you?
Yeah. And even if that pushes you out of your comfort zone, it's a really good thing to do, I think. And ultimately, especially if you're working on your own, which I did for the first few years, it can be quite isolating doing that on your own. It's a big challenge. So going out there and meeting other people in the same boat and chatting through things, bouncing ideas off people, it's a really good thing to do, I think.
Well, thank you very much, Stephanie. Some great advice there from Stephanie Croft-Simon from Nom Foods. And if you're really interested in the stuff that she does, and it does taste amazing because I've had some, it's all over the place. So, you know, Holland & Barrett, Ocado, all that sort of stuff. You'll find her stuff all about the place. Thank you very much, Stephanie.
Thank you, thanks.
I'm just munching here on some... on some apple crisps, which are lovely. They're sort of quite thick, actually, crunchy, got a lovely, lovely flavour. And I've got the guy who made them in front of me, and his name is Ben Whitehead, and his company is Spare Fruit. Why did you start making apple crisps, Ben?
It's a very good question. It took me a while to get there, actually, but I guess one of our USPs is that we use surplus fruit from small farms that struggle to deal with their food waste. And actually, from doing research and speaking to lots of farmers, apples are they're high yield, so we produce a lot in this country. And as a result, a lot is wasted for various reasons. Some is out of their control, some is, unfortunately. And really, for me, it's a brilliant British product. It's delicious. We grow a lot of it. And by creating crisps, it was a really kind of simple way for me to save as much apples as possible.
See, I live in Kent, which is full of orchards everywhere, and round the corner from my house there's a huge orchard, and they sell lots of apples all the time. But when you drive in, this time of year, isn't it, of course, you know, October, November, the whole of the floor is covered with apples that they don't even use, don't even pick, and that's that sort of waste fruit that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And you know, it ends up on the floor for many reasons. Sometimes it's, you know, it'll cost them so much to pick it, and they just won't get the price on the market for it. So actually, it's more financially viable to pick it and drop it than it is to actually process it, which is a real shame. That might be because of the weather. You know, they might have an extra big yield. It might be market conditions. You know, demand might drop off. It kind of depends year on year, but it's a picture that no one really wants to see. And I guess what we're trying to do is show that what has previously been totally undervalued has value. You know, these are fruit that taste perfectly delicious, but they're probably too small. They're probably the wrong colour. They might have a tiny blemish on it because of hailstorm, and that means that quite often the farmers, customers, and clients just won't buy it.
They're just not making the first team, are they? They're sort of, you know, the reserve team, and then they're not getting used, are?
That's right. And the crazy thing is, like for me, I use the small fruit, the, you know, all of the fruit I've just kind of mentioned, and actually it's perfect for crisps because the smaller apples, they hold a lot of flavour. They're slightly easier to process, and we get a great flavour. So, you know, I think if I can help farmers get money for all of their harvest, that's a really good thing.
That's good for them because there's no other way of them sort of monetizing that. I've just had a take. I'm gonna have some more because they're really quite Moorish. While I'm chewing on this whole packet, can you just tell me about coming here today? But have you learnt anything in particular? And I know you've been going for nearly 18 months actually, so is there anything that you've picked up here that you found useful today?
Absolutely. I just love meeting people, and for me, I think anyone that's kind of setting out, you know, and creating their own business, whether it's food or anything else, actually networks are really important. So for me, I love meeting people that have either been on a similar journey or about to embark on one, but also talking to experts that have, you know, there's people here that know how to grow brands. They've had amazing successes, but often they've been through several pitfalls, and I think if you can listen and learn from those experiences, hopefully you increase your chances, because there's all kinds of horrible stats about the amount of innovative food brands that start up but don't make it past year one or year three. So yeah, I've learned a lot this morning already. I've just been to an amazing talk on social media about how you can triple your sales, and it's all about Facebook. And here was me thinking, well, actually, you know, let's focus on Instagram and Twitter, but actually Facebook is the way to translate kind of social media traffic into sales. So immediately, you know, I'm going to go back and talk to the lady that helps me with my social media and re-strategize. So
I think that might be a slight sweeping statement. I think what you really need to do is work out where your particular target market is. And I think if you've really got a target market that's on Facebook, you know, that's where you need to be. If you've got a target market perhaps that's elderly, that probably isn't the place that you need to be. So I think we find Facebook for the, you know, the radio show really useful, but I do think you have to be mindful, don't you, of your actual target market.
Absolutely. I think the interesting thing with Facebook, and I didn't realise that actually they're recommending that you spend money on it, and you know, everyone assumes that it's free, and it is, but actually Facebook, if you get the audience there and then you spend a bit, that's way more likely to translate into sales than tweets. But there's all kinds of other conversations you want to be having with your audience through these other platforms. It's not that they're not important, but that surprised me a little bit. I'm not sure, but yeah, absolutely. You need to know your audience. You've got to work out how to talk to them in that, you know, engaging and consistent tone. That really came out. And there was a great session earlier from Whole Foods, and I think a lot of the brands here would love to be stocked with those guys. But what I really enjoyed was actually the brand values and the amount that they give back, given that that's kind of in my DNA. And they really... When you get listed, you don't just get a listing. They really work with you to develop your proposition, your point of sale, and add to your brand value, which is pretty incredible. But I think getting there and getting through the door is really tough.
But I mean, I think the thing that we do find here, though, is that at the food sector for me, and particularly when you come to events like this, it's an amazing sector because people are full of passion. And what I find is that actually people are prepared to give you a bit of time. And if you do come to these events and you do network, you'd be surprised how many people are very happy to offer advice. I mean, is that what you've found?
Absolutely. There's a lot of generosity in the room. And I think someone was telling me that quite often when people have been through the cycle of setting something up, there's the choppy waters, there's the moment where you think everything's going to hit the wall, you're out of money, you don't know how you're going to fulfill orders, you don't have the cash you need to invest to grow. But then if you stick at it, you come through it, and then hopefully, you know, you're successful. And I think it kind of, you go full circle, and when you kind of reach the top again, I think a lot of people want to give back because they see the perils and they want to help people through that, which is it's amazing, really. And
they can remember exactly what it's like, can't they?
I think so. But you know, maybe it's a food thing. You know, food brings people together. It's quite a bonding thing. You know, I spend my life eating, talking about food, or thinking about when I'm next going to eat, or talk about food. So maybe it's something that's slightly unique to this sector. I'm not entirely sure, but there is a real willingness to kind of come together, and people can learn off each other quite rapidly. And I think even established brands can learn off up-and-coming brands, you know, and I don't think you ever stop learning.
Well, that's certainly true. Ben, I love your spare fruit apple crisps. I've nearly eaten the whole packet now. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
So I'm here at Bread and Butter, and I've just found the Willy Wonka of nuts, and she has come over to have a little chat with us and tell us about what she's doing at Kinomi Nuts. Hello, Hiromi.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. I absolutely love the name Willy Wonka of nuts. I think that's absolutely brilliant. On the table in front of me, I've got three. They're kind of like, they look like little tins of beautifully branded Kinomi nuts. And this one is pink and it's got some beautiful drawings on it. And it's called Pori Pori Almonds. So, Hiromi, tell us about what you do.
Okay. So, I make a range of nuts called Kinomi. And they are organic nuts. And I roast them and flavor them, and with all kinds of different spices. They have a base flavoring of soy sauce, kombu, and sake, which are all real fundamentals of Japanese cooking. And kinomi means nuts in Japanese. And the different spices I layer on top are pretty much my whim, which is what makes me the Willy Wonka of nuts.
Brilliant. And how long have you been going with this?
So this is a rebrand and a relaunch. So these have been around for 3 months. So, but I've been doing nuts on and off for about 5 years.
Great. So the flavor combinations, is that just done by what you fancy trying and what tastes good?
Yes. So because I use really, really high quality organic nuts, they each have a very distinct flavor of their own. So I taste the raw nut and kind of start thinking, smell spices, think about what works together, and then put it together that way.
So is your background tasting, or what did you do before Kinomi Nuts was born?
So I started this whole food journey as a Japanese home cooking teacher, and I was serving the nuts as nibbles for the students. And people started asking to buy them, and then it kind of took on a life of its own, and I don't have time to teach cooking anymore.
Wow, that is absolutely brilliant. And where did you get the idea for the packaging? Because it's really different to any other nut packaging that I've seen. So they normally come in like little bags, or you might get them in a little plastic tub or even a can. But this is really quite different.
So I really like the tube idea, because even though these are a snack size, you know, if you don't eat it all in one go, and if it's in a bag, then it upends in your handbag, right? So this, you can put the lid back on and put it back in your handbag. And also, there's a Japanese chocolate sweet that comes in tubes that really reminds me of my childhood. So I thought, oh, it'd be nice if it looked like that.
Oh, so you've got a little bit of nostalgia there. That's lovely. So you bought a couple for us to try, which I can't wait to do. So what do we have here then? What are these pecans?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just hand them to our producer, Lucy, who's just going to open them up for us. So what would you say has been your biggest challenge about rebranding them?
So I would say that up until now, it's been very much a glorified hobby. So I didn't really understand branding until this current exercise, and there's so much to think about and know. And that's been, because for me, it's really all about just creating the product, so everything else is new.
Great. And these ones that I've got here, these pecans, what flavor are these?
They have palm sugar and kaffir lime and white pepper on them.
So I'm just trying one now. And they've got a little bit of sweetness to them, but not too much. You can still really taste the pecan. And I've just got the last little bit of lime towards the end. Is it a little bit of spice?
It's the white pepper.
Oh, yeah. The white pepper, I didn't hear you say that, sorry. They're amazing. What prompted you to do the rebranding in the first place, Remy?
The business had pretty much trickled down to just the food service business, and I was thinking of just closing up shop, you know, and then I met these accelerators who took me on and said, let's do this. So, they basically let me do what I wanted. You know, I'd always thought I can't work with organic nuts because it's going to be too expensive, and they said just do it and price it and people will buy it. And so yeah, so it's been a lot of fun, because this is something that I love and I'm very proud of. So yeah, worked out well.
Can't just say the depth of flavor of those pecans. It takes a while, so I did get that instant kind of little flavor taste, which is the actual pecan and the sweetness. But as you were talking, the kaffir lime leaf has just stayed in my mouth, and the slight little twang at the back of your palate that's the white pepper is absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
So where can we get hold of these?
So a couple of places online and in some independent shops around town, and I work with Marcus Carter from Artisan Food Club, so he's gotten me into Lagos. So yeah, no. So it's these are 3 months old. So I'm trying to get them out to as many places as I can. But for now, coffee shops and some independent delis.
Well, I can highly recommend giving them a go. They're not like any kind of snack that I've tried before. Absolutely brilliant product. Thank you so much for coming to see us.
Thank you for having me. Thanks very much.
I have with me Stephanie Perritor from Mindful Bites. She's practically set up shop on our table. She's come over and put the most amazing array of products in front of us, and I personally can't wait to give them a little try. I've also got Lucy here.
Hello.
And we are going to talk to Stephanie. Hello, Stephanie.
Hello, Chrissy. Hello, Lucy. Thank you for having me here today.
No problem. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the story behind these amazing products that we've got in front of us?
Sure, with real pleasure. We are just getting ready for launch. The brand is called Mindful Bites because there's a strong connection with mindfulness and mindful eating. So what we promote is not really a diet, but a fundamental shift in how we approach food and eating, nourishing each and every aspect of our well-being one bite at a time. We actually move away from a very spiritual, mindful approach. This is more a type of mindfulness that can be practiced by everybody in a very simple way. It doesn't require lengthy sessions meditating away. It doesn't really require any major changes to your life. What we really promote is just apply tiny little changes that can add quality to your life, but don't require you to become a different person than the person you were always meant to be.
Great. So the products that we have in front of us, I've got one in front of me that says Mindful Bites, Snack with Intention, Brazil Nut Butter and Cacao Nibs Wafer Bites, and that one's called Pleasure. That's very evocative, isn't it? Pleasure. Mm. And then on the back, which I absolutely love, there's a little interactive bit of...
about the packaging, yeah, I think.
A little bit of interactive packaging there. So you've got a little label that says Mindful Bites, Snack with Intention. And you just peel it off. And inside you've got all of the social media contacts. But you've also got a little quote. And my quote says, you want to fly... you got to give up the shit that weighs you down. And I love it. It's a little bit rebellious, but also so true. So was that your idea to have that, Stephanie?
Yes, it was. And I really feel that in order to transform convenience from food on the go to meaningful eating moments, but also moments for you to reconnect with yourself, you need to have something that brings you back to the purpose of your day. So we have 100 different messages at the back, so it's very unlikely that you will get the same one on the same day or, you know, next, you know, same to the person sitting next to you. It might happen, but not very, very likely. Hopefully, each message has got a different meaning, some of them a little bit deeper than others. And sometimes I think it's important to reflect on bigger topics. So some of them will have a very mindful consumption sense to them. So they'll get you to think about, you know, the 1 billion people that are starving as we fret about, you know, the nourishment that we need to add to our bodies. Some of them will be lighter and some of them will be a little bit rebellious. All the authors of these quotes are people that are current, that are relevant, that I think millennials and everybody, they know who they are, they know their achievements, and therefore it's people that naturally we want to aspire to. So hopefully, you know, they will help people to transform snacking into 10 minutes where, you know, you really come back to the present moment, you kind of check in with the purpose of what you're doing. You also say to yourself, well, I'm here and it's all good and this is really the best that I can do.
Brilliant. And you've also got some nut butters which look lovely. They're kind of looking a bit like puddingy to me. Do you know what I mean, Lucy, by that?
Yeah, they look quite... I could just get the spoon in. Normally I would just sort of touch a knife in slightly, but I'm going to fill that spoon up, I think.
Okay, so shall we have a little try? So Lucy, which one are you going to go for? We've got an orange one, which is almond and maca. We've got hazelnut and berries, which is blue. And then we've got cashew nuts and I don't even know how to say that. What's that?
Baobab.
Baobab, I don't know what that is.
I'm going to try that one.
And then we've got Brazil nuts and cacao nibs. Okay, so give it a go, Lucy. You try the one that I don't know how to say. Oh, gooey. Looks lovely. What's that like, Lucy?
Yeah, lovely. Really, really nice.
It's what fruity. Does it taste like?
Like quite fruity, isn't it?
It's, yes. It's very baobab. It's a very citrusy fruit, and yeah. It's got a kind of a tanginess to it. And this is why I really like it. And I think the combination with the cashew nuts, which are a little bit sweet, works beautifully. So a little bit about this: we focused an awful lot on the sensory experience of eating, really an awful lot, to kind of add different nuances to the taste, so that helps you to come back to the present moment and study. So if you are eating in a distracted way, when you eat this, you cannot really do that, because the novelty of the ingredients, or even the unusual way that they were blended together, forces you to kind of come back and go like, wait a second, what is it that I'm eating? And this applies both to the nut butters, but the nut butters are also the filling of our snacks. And there you also have the added element of crunchiness versus the creaminess of the nut butter that comes together.
So I just tried the purple one, which is the Brazil nuts and cacao nibs. Now, that one looks like a really thick chocolate fudge kind of... I expected it to be almost a bit sweeter than what it was, but I still did get that little edge of sweetness. I don't suppose it's supposed to be like a fudge sweetness, but the texture of it made me feel like I was having something incredibly indulgent. And I guess that's kind of where you're going with the textures and you know, with the science behind it.
You are totally spot on. The challenge here and the little experiment was, okay, I'm going to remove sugar. And there's no sugar and there's no substitute for sugars. We haven't added any ingredient that behaves like sugar. There's nothing like that. It's like, can I still convey to you that sense? Can I force you to actually sit with this in your mouth, because I played a little bit with the texture? It's going to take you a little bit longer than you had envisaged to eat this. There will be an element of playing with the palate. There will be you having to go, oops, maybe I don't really need that immediate rush of sugar to get that sense of pleasure. Maybe this is a different... But in doing so, I haven't preached to you, I haven't told you, I've actually given this to you. And I'm like, do you want to come and play with us? Play this little social experiment. And I'm glad you spotted that. I'm really glad you spotted that.
I'm glad too. I feel quite clever now. So you haven't launched yet, but it is very close, isn't it? Can you tell us how close it is to the big launch?
Very close. Very, very close. We're finalizing a few little bits and pieces that will be announced on social media for the launch. We clearly just really wanted to focus on having the right partners, because the message around... So clearly this is a business. This is a commercial adventure without a shred of a doubt. But at the same time... It isn't. So for me, this is really an opportunity to have a voice. I'm not really somebody who knows how to shout in a world where it seems like you really have to shout. I'm somebody that likes to talk in a happy, calm way and in a very natural way. This is a little bit of a social experiment. Can we get voices heard? Can we get people to use food choices and experiences not just as a way to feel at the best, but also as a way to create stronger human connections, as a way to create more sustainable lifestyles. So I think there is this part of the social experiment, having a voice that matters to me as much as the business itself, and for that I really wanted the right partners on board to launch.
Absolutely, and it is so important. This is your baby, so you have to make sure that you get it absolutely right, and you're confident and comfortable with it before you introduce this to the rest of the world. So if we want to find out about it and hear about the launch first, do we follow you on social media, Stephanie?
Yes, please. It's we are active on Instagram and Twitter at Mindful Bites UK. We have a page on Facebook. We are getting ready to launch a Snapchat channel. And we are revamping also our website, which is already up and running, but we are revamping that with some interesting details for all of you. And maybe just also an extra thing, at the back of each package, we have a quite clever code, which is we partner up with the tech startup Quickly. And this code, if people scan it after they downloaded the app, it takes them through a guided mindful eating journey. Also, they get access to more information regarding the ingredients. Some of them are a little bit trivial. Some of them are, you know, kind of meaningful. And also, they can get vouchers for immediate repeat purchases, both in stores and online.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, I can't wait to see where you're going to put in these products. I want to see them everywhere. I think they're brilliant, and I love the quirky packaging and branding that you have on them. Good job, Stephanie. Thank you for coming to see us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm here at Bread and Butter, and I have a lady in front of me who I've just met, and we're going to have a chat about bone broth. I've got Roz Heathcote. Hello, Roz.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your business and how you got to where you are now?
Yeah, so I started the Burra Broth Company just over a year and a half ago. It came out of a personal journey. That sounds a bit cheesy, but I got kind of obsessed with nutrition and bone broth, and I was making it at home a lot. And I found it was really hard to source good organic bones, and I met a butcher in Burra Market, and we had a chat, and he said if I could help him with some business consulting, he would help me, he would give me free bones. And I thought, all right, this is a good idea. If he can give me the volume, let me see if I can start a business doing it. And that was sort of where it came from, really.
Okay, that sounds great. So a kind of a bartering system that you've got going on there, which seems to be having a bit of a resurgence at the moment. You were saying before we started recording that it's really taken off. Why do you think that is?
I think it's, you know, I'm not trying to fool anyone that bone broth is any different from a really good stock. And I think that's sort of, that's been my approach from the beginning, is that it's not a fad. It's actually one of the oldest foods around. You know, boiling bones has been done since prehistoric times, and it's very nutritionally beneficial. And, you know, there's still lots to explore about the benefits. And I think that people are realising that we need to get back to real whole foods, and buying stock cubes that are weird mashes of sugar and salt and yeast extract just to add flavour to something isn't really that good for you. And this is a brilliant way of incorporating really good food into your diet and adding amazing flavour. So it's just taken off because people are discovering it now.
So do you think people are ready now to go back to that more traditional way of cooking than they might have been, I don't know, 20 years ago when you know, stock cubes were really seen as a staple?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, the stock cube was born out of the war when there was a shortage of meat, and they discovered that MSG or yeast extract was a good way of getting that umami, like meaty flavour into food. So at the time it was, you know, it worked and it was useful for people because meat was a shortage. And I think, yeah, now people are returning back to it. People are cooking at home more. People look at the ingredients on their packets. You know, the trend is cooking at home, trend is organic food. And there's, you know, you watch TV any night of the week and there are shows about what goes into your food. So I think people are becoming very wise to it now.
And where do you sell your products, Roz?
Well, we sell in Selfridges. That's where we launched a year ago, almost exactly a year ago now. And then we sell in a number of delis across London. And then we sell via our partner farm, Coon Farm Organic, online. And they are an organic grass-fed meat-rearing company. And they sell us the bones and we sell them the broth back. And it's a very nice arrangement we have.
And how about packaging and kind of shelf life? Did you have some issues there that you had to get over when you first started doing it?
Yeah, you know, because I don't add any preservatives and the way we processed it, I wanted it to replicate how I made it at home because I viewed it as a consumer. And so, and when I looked at the trends in America, you know, it was frozen. That was how it was going. So it's not always the most popular because the frozen aisle isn't where people want to wander. So we do chilled for some clients and we do frozen for others, predominantly sell frozen at the moment. But the plan is that there's a new process that I'm looking into, which would mean that we can get it chilled for a decent shelf life without adding any preservatives, additives or acids or extracts.
And that's really important to you and your whole kind of ethos of the company and why you started it up, isn't it? So if our listeners want to get hold of some, can they buy it online or do they have to go to one of your suppliers?
They can absolutely buy it online. If they just go through my website and click buy online, there are two options. You can either buy from Farm Drop, and they currently are only in London, but they deliver to your door, and then Coombe Farm Organic, the farm I was talking about before.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, thank you very much. I know you've got to go home and make some more now, haven't you?
Yeah, not home. We have a kitchen now. I don't make it at home anymore. but yeah, I've got to go straight there from here and make more broth.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, thanks so much.
Well, that sounds like it was loads of fun. I mean, Willy Wonka nuts. Oh, no. That's doing it for me.
I love bone broth, though. There's something very, very, I don't know, Stone Age and sustaining.
It's very it's a real comfort food, isn't it?
Definitely. And it's one of those things that you would want to do yourself, but it takes hours. And
right,
if you
want
to get that amazing flavour through the bones, that you have to do it for hours and hours. And, you know, and who's got the time to do that?
Yeah, sure.
So I'm going to get some of that because it's absolutely makes a lovely basis for any soup or any of that stuff. And we were talking about noodles, weren't we, last week?
We were.
Lovely.
Yeah, sounds fantastic.
So, really, yes, it was a really great event. And, again, so many passionate, lovely people.
And it's a real shame I missed it because it sounded like it was a fantastic thing.
It was very business orientated, so you'd have liked it because it was very much about, you know, what business problems have I got and how can I overcome them? It wasn't just about the food.
Yeah, because there's apart from the general business issues that you have with any business, there's some very specific things with the organic and homemade food market.
And it was very interesting to hear what the buyers specifically are looking for, because they see literally hundreds of products a day, and they were really good. They were really helpful with everybody explaining, you know.
Right.
And the thing that came out to me is absolute quality and absolute amazing taste is a given.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, I don't know, gluten-free or you've got no sugar in it, whatever. It doesn't matter anymore. It has to be taste amazing.
Yeah.
And if you can't get that, don't even bother going in the industry.
Absolutely.
And there's still loads of other things to think about too, of course.
Yeah, sure. But the interesting thing on the other side of that is that if you make really good quality, good tasting food that's gluten-free or vegan or vegetarian or whatever, those of us that aren't gluten intolerant or aren't veggies or aren't vegans will still enjoy eating it.
And that's what came out very strongly this time. And the buyers aren't interested about whether it's gluten-free in one respect because it still has to taste amazing.
Yeah.
The fact that it is gluten-free is, you know, or whatever,
just
is a bonus.
Just expands the market.
Indeed.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Rather than it being a narrow market now, interestingly, if you can achieve that, you're actually broadening your market, which is the opposite. It was really interesting development.
And that's what you need with that kind of food, isn't it, to make it realistic? No, absolutely. Totally agree. Good stuff.
Yeah, it was really good. Two speakers that were there as well that I really enjoyed listening to were Ben Woodgate and Michael Weber. And they're the guys behind Whole Foods. And if you don't know who Whole Foods are, they've got these, I don't really like to call them supermarkets because they're not really, but they're literally markets with food in.
Right.
And they're very, very committed to sustainability. And they are, I mean, they started, the Whole Food group started out in 1980 in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
And they are the world leader in natural and organic foods. They have 462 stores.
I mean, how many?
462. They're
wow.
Huge. Most of those are in the USA, and they've got I think they've got one in Canada. And then in 2004, they came over to the UK, and they've got 9 stores here. And I've been to the one in Camden and the one in Kensington, and they are just incredible. And they've got all these amazing products. And also they do lots of fresh food as well. So you can go there and buy their homemade soup, or they make sandwiches, or they make noodles. And it's just a great mix of going and buying food that you can take home to eat immediately, or buying stuff, you know, that you can make your own food when you get home, sort of thing.
Oh,
it's a really great mix, really interesting. And these guys were lovely. And when we were just listening to that pre-record just now, I mean, Ben Whitehead mentioned Whole Foods. And what he was saying is absolutely true. The great thing about these guys is they really help the producers get better at what they do.
Right.
So they almost take them under their wing. You know, they don't just stock them in store and then if it doesn't sell, they just delist them. They actually really try and help these guys. So loads of producers want to get into Whole Foods for all sorts of reasons. Gives you great cachet for a start.
Mm.
And I was lucky enough that these guys said, oh, we really like the Food Talk radio show. And so they said that they would do a nice interview with us. So I've got both Benjamin Woodgate and Michael Webber giving some great advice on how to get into Whole Foods and also how to get your product into a market, supermarket.
Fantastic. Shall we hear from them?
Yes.
Let's hear from them.
Hi, I'm at the Bread and Butter event that's going on in London in the middle of November, and it's a pretty cold, horrible day out there. I've got Benjamin Woodgate with me and Michael Webber, and they're from Whole Foods Market. And if you're ever in London and around Camden, you'll know the Whole Foods Market because it's just the most fabulous shop, and I spend a fortune when I go in there because I just can't help it. Benjamin, if I could ask you first, just tell us a little bit about Whole Foods Market, because it's not just in the UK, is it?
No, Whole Foods Market was born in the USA. It started in Austin, Texas in 1979 by a very idealistic bunch of hippies, and they wanted to create a supermarket that was safer. And a year later, Whole Foods Market was born. We're now in, we've got 440 plus stores. We're in America, Canada, and in the UK. And in the UK, we have 9 stores and 1 online shop. So if you're in London, there are 7 stores you can visit. Camden is one of our oldest ones, very small, but our large flagship store is at Kensington High Street. And if you have ever been to that shop and you are a foodie, you will absolutely be blown away to see all of the produce that is out. I mean, it's really like an indoor market, and we run all of our teams like an individual business. And so the team leader, we don't have managers, we have team leaders. The team leader in the bakery truly owns that bakery and puts all their heart and soul into it. So you'll find a lot of very passionate and very proud team members with some really fantastic displays and merchandising. It truly is a feast for the eyes and a fun day out.
I often go there just to go and get something to eat, let alone do my sort of weekly shopping, because some of the food offerings are brilliant.
Absolutely. We have a lot of people that come in and they want to just grab something to eat. But what we want to encourage people to do is to shop the aisles and get to know our grocery department, get to know our butchers and our bakers. And crucially, I think people in London especially, you know, we've only got 2 hands. So we're now offering some delivery services to help make it easier for people. But no, getting people into the aisles is important. Everything you buy in a Whole Foods market is what we would call clean. It's been independently inspected by our team. We've got a very strict list of ingredients we will never allow. Broadly, that's no artificial colorings, flavorings, preservatives, hydrogenated fats, but it goes way beyond that, and it goes into our healthcare as well. The skin is the biggest organ on the body, and so we think that what you put on it is just as important as what you put in it. So you can come into a Whole Foods market and know that it's a safe harbor, that we've done all the hard work. You really don't need to read the label. And so getting people to start by buying a fantastic burrito or freshly made juice is really a bit of a gateway product for us, in that we wanted to get people into the aisles and to adopt this lifestyle of eating and living better.
Great deal of trust in your brand is important, isn't it? Michael, can you tell me, there's a lot of people here who are trying to pitch their products. They've made these lovely things and they're trying to get them listed on supermarkets or whatever. I know quite a lot of people approached you today. What advice would you give to somebody who's just, you know, made some amazing product? We've seen some great ones here. What advice would you give them in order to get them, you know, into the mainstream?
I think the biggest thing is to know their market. Their products are unique and special, and we look for stories behind the product. What makes it unique? Those are the things that attract us the most. But then again, there's a high-quality product out there, and it might not be unique, but it might be better quality. So we stand behind what we put on the shelves. So, of course, we want to see products that meet our strict quality standards, but we also want it to be delicious. At the end of the day, it has to be delicious, and we want people to come back over and over again to get that product.
So the standard is you've got to have something delicious, and without something delicious, you've got no chance. We see quite a lot of same products that come out, and I guess that innovation's really important, so something that's new and different. But if it's the same as a lot of other products, it's got to be the best of the best.
Well, yeah, it has to be the best of the best. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, bacon isn't very innovative, but, you know, the sourcing of the pig, maybe it's a heritage breed. Maybe it's in the process or the type of smoke that they use, you know, traditionally oak, but what other flavors can they coax out of it? So well, you can still innovate in existing known products as well. So.
And have you got any advice on price, you know, pricing points?
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in value being it's priced right for what it is. So if it is a heritage pork breed and a unique product, then, you know, it can be priced a little higher in the market because people are looking for that product and they will spend a little bit more. And I think that's why it's so important to tell the story of your product, why you came up with it, why you developed it, why are you using the ingredients, why do you care about those ingredients, because at the end of the day, that's what matters.
And you're enjoying this event, Benjamin, just seeing all the... I mean, food's quite an exciting time at the moment, quite a lot of technology, quite a lot of interest going on. Any trends that you're spotting that you're quite excited by?
Well, I think, as Mike was just saying, you know, the categories are very busy, and but there's always innovation. There's always new product development happening. And for anyone that was lucky enough to be here this weekend, they will see that this hall is buzzing with people and fantastic ideas. Yeah, and these people are, you know, they are so passionate, they're so excited, and I think there are so many trends here represented. For us, something that we're really trying to drive forward is the bakery and prepared food side of our business. That's very important, and we really want to elevate that. And we, in fact, next week, we've got a bunch of our team members coming together into a hall, and we're doing a similar thing to this. We're having an innovation summit, and so each store is bringing 5 team members with a bunch of ideas that they'd like to see on shelf, and then we're going to take those ideas and develop them and have them in our shops. So innovation for us is at the core of what we do.
Well, thank you very much. Loads of good advice there. And as you say, that the buzzing excitement, you can hear it in the background. So Michael and Benjamin from Whole Foods, where can we find out more about you and where your sort of, you know, all your markets are? Because I would recommend anybody's listening to pop along to one if they haven't, because it's not the normal model of going and buying food. So where can we find out more about you?
So I'd recommend going to any of our social handles. We're on Twitter, Instagram and on Facebook, but the website is wholefoodsmarket.co.uk.
Perfect. Thank you, guys.
I love innovation, and these guys are really innovative, aren't they?
They're just really nice. They're just two really nice guys, and they're passionate, and I like the model. And one of the things he was saying there is, you know, don't worry about checking all the labels in the Whole Food markets, because actually we've done it for you. There is, you know, we banned all these ingredients, so you don't have to look at the back of a packet,
because that's really annoying when you do that, isn't it? I can never read half of it because the print's too small, even with my glasses on.
Yeah. I didn't even think you actually bought anything. I only thought you lived on takeaways, Paul.
Well, that is true. There's no do you know, though, there's no warnings whatsoever on my kebab.
No, I bet there isn't. So I've bought you, because we've got no studio guests today, so I have bought you today some baklava in.
Talking of kebabs.
yeah. And it's now, I've put them in front of you. I didn't put them in front of you before in case you stole them, because I know you haven't had any lunch. And it is, it's World Baklava Day.
Is it really? Wow.
So we're celebrating baklava. And baklava is a sort of Eastern Mediterranean type of traditional pudding. And it is literally thousands of years old, going back thousands of years old. And in those days, it was prepared only on special occasions and tended to grace the tables of the rich and the royals of ancient time.
Bring it on.
Not my family, obviously. Mm. Probably yours. You've got something for. and it's, but it's very sweet, and it's always been very sweet. And I believe that mostly, there's lots of recipes for baklava, but mostly it is loads and loads of layers of phyllo pastry to get that really crunchy loveliness. Honey generally, and nuts.
Yeah.
So I've got some in front of you. I've got one here that's all rolled, and it's supposed to be baklava with cashew nuts. Would you like to try that?
Yes, I would. I'm fascinated by this. Sue's got a tray full of different types of baklava, and one of them is chocolate covered, and I've never seen that before. But this is the one with cashew nuts, yeah?
Yeah, I would imagine the chocolate one isn't obviously traditional. It's probably sort of catering to modern tastes. But what's that taste like then? You like it? Because the thing with baklava, though it's sweet, I love the crunchiness, which you don't really get with any other dessert, I don't think. Really crunchy.
That is fabulous.
Is
that
it good?
Is really great. And it was very crunchy.
And I've actually seen people make phyllo pastry in some of the markets in, you know, abroad, you know, in Turkey or Istanbul or and sort of other places, Morocco as well. And these guys who make phyllo pastry are incredible. They spin it in the air. It is so thin, you can almost see through it.
Right.
You know, and that's all they do. They just make phyllo pastry. That's their expertise. It's almost impossible for you to make it yourself. You would never get it that thin. Mm. But the point of, you know, baklava is you've got layers and layers and layers and layers of phyllo pastry, you know, dozens of layers. Mm. And, you know, that's what gives you all that crunch. It's absolutely delicious, isn't it? And actually, phyllo pastry is quite low fat.
Right, okay.
Is that allowed on your diet? No.
No, I need lots of fat.
You need
I'll have to eat lots. Well, I can solve that. I'll just eat the whole tray.
Yeah. So try another one. Was that nice? Cashew nuts? Or are you going to go for the chocolatey one? You don't like chocolate.
I don't like chocolate. Mm. I really, really enjoyed that. It was very crunchy, very tasteful. And I am, as I've probably mentioned once or twice on the show, a bit of a fan of Greek and Turkish food.
I know you do like it.
My favourite restaurant is Ozgur's in Tenston, which is a Turkish restaurant. And Mustafa, who owns the restaurant, always insists on me having baklava and a rhubarba when I finish my meal.
Rhubarba? Oh, yeah. My God, that's a really old-fashioned.
Yeah, yeah.
If anybody is listening and doesn't know what rhubarba is, it's almost like it's like a donut, I would say.
It's spongy. It's really
very spongy.
Soft and wet, spongy.
And it's supposed to be infused with rum, although mostly it isn't, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And when you bite into it, generally, it sort of oozes out, doesn't it?
It does, it's sloppy. It's sweet and sloppy.
I haven't seen one of those for donkey's years. I didn't know they were still around.
Well, Mustafa gives me a baklava and a rhubarba. I'm not a big fan of rhubarbas, I have to say, because it's quite messy, but I always like a bit of a baklava. That was lovely. Can I try another one?
Yeah, you can try another one. So this one in the middle, I think, has got walnuts.
Right,
I think that's the thing. It's you have sort of honey and pastry and nuts.
Do you know what this one is? Is that fig or date or something?
No, that, I think, has got golden brown something.
Oh, okay.
Sugar, I think.
All right, well, I'm gonna try. Which one's the walnut? This
one? I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Let's have a go at that.
Can I just say, he's probably going to eat the whole tray.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Well, I need the fat, you see. Yeah.
You could do a bit of Greek dancing when we finished after that. And that would sort of add to our baklava day, wouldn't it? Mm. National Baklava Day. So if anyone's listening, then it is National Baklava Day. And if you're on your way home, then maybe, you know, just to celebrate, you should be buying some on the way home. Mm. Most supermarkets, I do think, have some half-decent baklava that you can buy. Mm. And this one that I've got today is called Dina's, D-I-N-A, baklava. And it's quite good, isn't it?
It's lovely.
Says it's handmade.
And just so the listeners know, it's a tray of little bite-sized baklava, so I'm not eating a whole, you know, giant baklava
Surprisingly.
Here.
Surprisingly.
Yeah. They are just bite-sized ones. That was delicious, too. I enjoyed that. Have you had one? You haven't had one yet?
I have. I've nicked one. Have you? But I'm going to nick another one in a minute. So that's it for this week. Mm. Next week, we're at Food Matters Live, which is a huge, huge exhibition, conference, seminar. Mm. Thing all around food, and it's at Excel.
Mm.
And I know you and me are there on Wednesday.
We are
with the show.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Mm. There's some great. If you are at all interested in food, not only are there obviously exhibitors with loads and loads of different types of products and things going on, it's probably the best, I would say, food seminar conference program. You know, for somebody who's seriously interested in food. So the government are there explaining to people how they can export. There's quite a lot around food and health and obesity. Stuff around ethical food advertising, you know, should we what should we be advertising to children in terms of food, and how does that shape what they eventually think of food as when they're adults? You know, there's some really interesting speakers there.
I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be loads of fun.
Yeah, it's a really good mixture there. It's not just a, you know, I mean, speciality in fine food fair is great if you want to go and, you know, taste lots of different foods, but this is a really great mixture.
Mm.
So I'm looking forward to it. And if anybody out there is at Food Matters Live, please come and see us on our stand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, if anybody's got any really innovative, you know, products and things that they're doing in the food sector, you know how much we like to feature innovation on the show. So again, please come and see us.
Yeah. And when's it running from and to?
I know it's Tuesday and Wednesday. Yeah. I don't know whether it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I should have found that out, shouldn't I?
In my diary, it says it's Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, but I don't always trust my diary.
No. Well, I'm definitely there Tuesday, Wednesday, and you and me are there on Wednesday, and we'd love to meet anybody at the show.
Yeah. So, come and say hello. We'd love to see you. We've got a pop-up radio studio there, as always.
Yep.
But aside from that, we'll be back with a Food Talk show next Thursday at 4 o'clock.
Excellent.
And it'll be good to see you and hear you and share the show with you.
Thank you. See you next week.
Cool. See you next week. Bye-bye.